let me in. Shibba, shibba. I want to be closer to you. Shibba, shibba. Open up your soul. Shibba, shibba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. There are so many wonderful things in and around the city to enjoy. So many creative people here in the Bay Area who do amazing things. One of those people who does amazing things. He's a director, he's a producer, he's a writer, and he's part of the Afro Solo Arts Festival. I'd like to welcome Thomas Robert Simpson. Hello.
Hello there. How are you doing today, Miss Marilyn?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic.
So before we get into the Afro Solo Arts Festival, I want to talk about how did, tell me the origin story of the Afro Solo of group.
Well, actually, Afro Solo started way, way, way back in the old century. It was in 1991. I was about to turn 39.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to throw a party for myself at my last years of 30-something. I had performers, there was writers, there was violinists, there were dancers, there were poets, theater people,
mm-hmm.
rented the space, had it catered, and it was fantastic. The next year, people asked, well, what are you going to do for your birthday?
Uh-huh.
So we had another performance party. The next year, another performance party. And I thought, oh my goodness, this will make a really nice annual event. So we had our first Afro Solo Arts Festival in 1994, and we've been having them every year, and they've grown since then.
You know what I love about that story? It's that it's so organic. Most people have no idea that that's really how greatness starts. It's just, you know, it seems pretty random. Like, oh, I'm going to have a party, and it's a party that grew. I love that story.
Yes, 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 yes.
So now let's talk about the Afro Solo Arts Festival.
Actually, we're into our 31st year now.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it was yesterday when we first started. We have a pretty fantastic program around the theme of Let Freedom Ring. What we often do is try to connect what we do with what's going on in our culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of Black life. So this year we have actually, 6 wonderful performances. They will all happen each night. They're 10 to 20 minutes each. So in lots of ways, you get an immersion of Black culture.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of those.
Well, we have, in terms of music, in terms of Black culture, music is really, really, really important. And one big part of our history and our culture is Black spirituals and gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a fantastic singer do what he's calling songs that feed my soul. It's a mini concert around Black spirituals and gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman, his name is Douglas Haynes, and he's actually from a family of great singers. I heard him sing several times, and I often will go to people and say, hey, I produce Afro Solo, I've heard you sing, I've heard you do this, would you like to be in our festival? And that's what I did with him. I just love this voice so much, I thought that it would be great if we added him to our repertoire
mm-hmm.
of people. And so he's going to sing, and he's going to be accompanied by a fantastic pianist, Dr. Carl Blake. So that's one part.
Okay.
And in terms of Let Freedom Ring, songs have been important to us ever since we've come over here.
That's awesome.
We have another interesting part of Afro Soul that's new for us this year, in that we're going to have an AI film, artificial intelligence film. And what this film is going to be about is about a story that I wrote a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a dreamy story. It's a hope story. It's a story that, you know, has mixed results in the sense that it's about urban renewal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about urban renewal from a childlike innocence point of view, about how they're going to come in and fix up his neighborhood. He's going to get a new house, and he's going to build this big street, mm-hmm. and everything is fine and dandy, except he's got to move out for a little while. So the point is, with all this dreaminess of this young kid, will this house ever be built? And is after he moves out, will he ever have to come? Will he be able to come back in? Mm. So it's sort of a fun, upbeat take on what might be considered a serious issue. The interesting about this is we've never shown films at Afro Solo,
mm-hmm.
but I met this gentleman who is a filmmaker who does, as I said, AI films, and he takes stories and makes films out of them. So I'm really excited about working with him. His name is Hugh Lehman,
mm-hmm.
and he's done some different things in lots of different countries around art, in particular around film and AI-type things.
That's interesting. Now, did he approach you about this, or did you approach him? How did this come about?
I teach a couple of writing classes,
mm-hmm.
and one of the writing classes I teach is at the Dr. George Davis Senior Center over in the Bayview. And they have a number of different artists working with the residents and the community people there.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was introduced to this gentleman who came in and said he did this type of work. And I'm like, you do what? I never heard of that.
Uh-huh.
He said, yes, I do this. And what I do is I'll take a story and I'll create pictures and I can create some film based on that story. And I said, sure. Then I sent him a couple of stories that people had written. And he sent me some iterations of that. And I thought, wow. This is good. And I thought about my story. I thought, I'll experiment with you, buddy,
uh-huh.
if you can really do this.
Uh-huh.
So I shared this story with him. And bless Pete, he came back with an idea that was very, very intriguing and very well done. So that's how it came about. Again, one of these chance meetings with someone. And the interesting thing about him is that he's a Caucasian guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really had Caucasians pretty much in Afro Solo, in the sense that we focus primarily on black culture, except in music. When
mm-hmm.
we have bands, all the bands are often mixed, although we generally focus on one soloist. But in terms of having an integral part in it, it's very interesting. But he's taken this story that I wrote, and he's still working on it,
mm-hmm.
but I think some magic might come out of it.
Oh, okay. So when you work together, so how does that process work, or does he just run with what you give him?
I shared the story with him,
mm-hmm.
and then he came up with some ideas.
Okay.
He sent me those ideas in terms of video,
mm-hmm.
and then I gave him feedback.
Oh, okay.
What seemed to work, what didn't seem to work, and he would go back and rework it. And within AI, there are also limitations. So
sure.
within the limitations that he has with the program that he's using, so it's a give and take.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That sounds fascinating. Who else have you got on the roster?
I have a woman who is named Augustine Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Augustine Phillips is in my senior writing class at George Davis. She's about 84 years old, very dynamic, just wonderful and very bright and just a good overall person.
Mm-hmm.
She has written a book based on the works that we've done in our class. And what I often do is give them a prompt, and then they begin to write on that prompt.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I gave them I read Langston Hughes, Let America Be America Again. Are
mm-hmm.
you familiar with that particular one?
I'm not, but go on.
Okay, it's a great one. It's the idea that America has not been what America was supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
In terms of freedom and justice for all. She took that poem, and she took the idea, don't let America become that America again. And she used her father's experience being a sharecropper in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And being a sharecropper, frequently they didn't get paid what they were supposed to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked really, really hard. But the interesting thing about her with this is that when she read her story, she talked about her picking cotton. And I thought, ooh, I've heard about this, but I've never really met anyone who was a cotton picker.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of her work with her family, as a young girl, she would go out and pick cotton. And she wrote about that in this particular piece. And the theme of the piece is, with all the different denials of ANI and all the political things that are going on, And Trump is talking about make America America again. She's saying, don't let it be that America again, where her grandfather, her father, was did not have the rights that he should have had. That we'd like for it to be the let America be America again that Langston Hughes dreamed about, where everyone would have their rights.
Nice.
And it's, there's some humor in it. There's some seriousness in it. But it's just a wonderful, well-written story.
Now, as someone who is teaching someone, do you take a certain amount of, I'm going to say, fatherly pride in the fact that someone actually wrote a book that's taking your class?
I take a lot of pride in that, but I give it to the people who are doing the writing.
Oh, of course.
Because without them, it wouldn't happen. But yes, I feel great that her taking this class, and she's created this book.
Wow. And what's that book called again?
The Life and Times of Augustine Phillips. We still haven't published it yet, but it's in the manuscript and everything's ready to go, and some fantastic stories.
Excellent, excellent. And I understand you have another writer.
Yes, her name is Libra Shepherd. And Libra's story is called, is named, titled, I Do Love You. And again, our work, we often get to the heart and the soul, the trauma, the excitement of people's lives. And this particular story by Libra is about her brother, who she fell in love with. Her father did not want her to spend much time with her brother because her brother was kind of in the life.
Okay.
But he adored her, and she adored him. One day, when she was riding with him, there was a police stop. And something happened. And this was so traumatic for her that it sort of set her life into a tailspin. And although she's in her, I don't know, people don't tell the ages, she's older now. She's just begun to be able to write about this incident within the last 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And to write about it in the class. And she has created this wonderful story about her life, her brother, her father, what happened to her, and how she's come through that experience. It's just so inspirational for anyone to hear. And that's one of the things about Afro Solo that I think is that our stories are human stories. So we invite everyone to come to our events, and we share the bonds that unite all people. And this is one that will do that.
So when and where is the show?
The show is going to take place next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, not this week, but next week, March, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 28th through the 30th of March. Now, Friday and Saturday, they will be at 7 o'clock, and on the Sunday show, we have a matinee at 3 o'clock. And it's going to be at a theater over in Potrero Hill called Potrero Stage, and it's at 1659 18th Street. Or you can get this information from our website, which is afrosolo.org, afrosolo.org.
Okay. Now, how would people purchase tickets, and can people buy tickets at the door?
People can purchase tickets at the door. And there is, if people don't have funds, that's not an issue. We invite everybody to come. You can go to the website, afrosolo.org, and get information on purchasing tickets also.
And I understand you have streaming options?
Yes. You can attend the show in person, or you can view it in your home through streaming. And if you live in San Francisco, great. If you live in New York, great. If you live anywhere, you can stream it live, the performances, and all of them will be streamed live. But we have one other thing that's kind of I decided to do like last week.
Which
one of the things that I've been working on is trying to alleviate the issue of black people being killed by police as a result of simple police stops. So I created this project that I call Stop Showing Control, The Art of Surviving a Police Stop. We will have a performance based around that idea, and we'll have a many discussion about it on Friday and Sunday, but on Saturday we're going to have a post-performance discussion on Stop, Show, Control, The Art of Surviving a Police Stop. And I hope to have lawyer, some other community people to engage in this, what I think is a very important conversation in the community.
Okay. So when and where is that again?
Same place.
Okay.
All these things are happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday next week, March 28th and 9th at 7 o'clock, and then Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Potrero Stage, which is at 1695 18th Street in San Francisco over on Potrero Hill.
And
people should remember that they don't see one of these each night or two of these each night. They will see the whole program each night.
Excellent. And one more time for our listening audience, the website where they can find out more about Afro Solo?
AfroSolo.org, AfroSolo, one word, .org, Afro Solo.
All right. Well, Thomas Robert Simpson, thank you so much for being on the show. And if there's one message you'd like our audience to walk away with today, what would that be?
The message that I would like for people to walk away with by seeing these shows, it will strengthen your faith and belief in humanity, as well as encourage you to move forward with a goal that you would like to accomplish. I found that out from some research that we've done from our audiences. We found that coming to Afro Solo motivates you to do something that you would like to do.
Excellent. Well, with that, Thomas Robert Simpson, once again, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very, very much, and I hope your congregation of people will come and experience Afro Solo.
Excellent. People of Earth, you heard the cry. Go check out Let Freedom Ring Part 2. Go enjoy it.
Freedom the highway. Oh, I tell you, each and every day.
Oh, you know I love me some Staple Singers. That's Freedom Highway from Freedom Highway. It is 1220 here at 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there's a new thing opening up called Crooners. One of the founders is here to talk about it. I'd like to welcome the effervescent and vivacious Sean Owens. How are you?
Hello, Marilyn. It's so lovely to be here. I'm so happy.
I'm happy that you're here, too. So first of all, tell me a little bit about, like, how did Crooners come about?
This was one of those wonderful, magical events. If you're familiar with Stookey's Club Modern, it is a beautiful 1930s deco style, kind of a speakeasy bar at the edge of Bush and Taylor, right at that corner. And I've frequented it over the years. And one night I was just sitting in there and I looked down and I said to my partner, have you seen that door before? And they said, no. We went and pushed the door open a little bit and they had opened another side. So there is now Stookey's Blue Room. We were not there for its official opening.
Okay.
We were just there nosing around. Pushed the door open. And I walked in, and an old friend from New York happened to be sitting in there as well.
Oh.
And turned to me and said, oh, I suppose you're here to pitch a new show. And the other person at the bar turned around and said, what kind of a show? And it was the owner, Aaron Cole. It was one of the owners.
Wow.
And so Aaron Cole turned around, and I said, well, Aaron, what kind of show do you want to see in here?
Uh-huh.
Because I had a vision in my mind. And Aaron said, as if it was pre-written, you know what I would love to see are some of those old crooners back. And I said, Aaron, do I have a show for you? It's called Crooners.
Uh-huh.
It already exists. It stars Chester Vanderbox and Polly Amber Ross, two of the great, some of the great drag performers in the city.
I just saw them in, what was it, Dracula?
Dracula, yes. At Oasis. So good. They do such good work. And because they are basically a drag husband and wife team.
Uh-huh.
They have incredible rapport together on stage. They're both live singers.
Uh-huh.
So we do something called Crooners, which is a lavender live sing cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
And what's marvelous is that I think people associate drag with lip sync, and it's really a nice reminder that drag artists do other things, have voices, have power.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our ongoing missions is just to say we are not back-combing queerness into the 1930s. We are simply reminding people that queer and trans artists have always existed, that they will continue to exist, and that they have lived in every era of music. And so as we go through the eras, we get this opportunity to lend queer voice to some of these great jazz standards and everything from I mean, we literally do it all.
Mm-hmm.
In March, we're going to be doing Crooners Goes to the Movies, so it will be all songs either from movie soundtracks or inspired or simply songs about our love of the movies.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So how many times have you done the show?
We are almost on our year anniversary,
actually.
Wow,
you've been doing it for a year.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
You do
April
it every month?
Will be our year. Yes, it is every fourth Sunday of the month.
Okay.
At Stookey's Blue Room, and it is we do two shows a night. So there's a 7 and a 9 o'clock show. And, you know, somewhere down the line, we are very much hoping that you will come and join us.
Well, I'm already saying yes.
You gorgeous songbird, you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm already saying yes.
Lovely.
But what I love about this story is the serendipity of it. I mean, you saw a door that didn't exist for you before. You went in even though there was no reason for you. And someone was – like it wasn't even open. And someone you knew was there. The person said the thing that was in your brain. Or did you just say like, oh – because that's what I would do. I'd be like, oh, you want Crooners? Well, I just happened to have been thinking
I just happened to have that for you. But the way in which I really feel like it was predestined is that Tim Stookey and his wife, Leslie Cole, the owners of the original Club Moderne, had wanted that space to not simply be quaint 1930s, you know, vintage looks, vintage values.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted contemporary performers in there, and they wanted a queer night.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't know how to ask for that.
Mm.
And so with the biggest open heart they possibly could, they have welcomed us in, and we have felt so at home there. And I always say half of the magic is the audience. We show up with half the show, and the audience shows up with the other half. It is only a 26-seat venue, mm-hmm. so you get this incredibly intimate evening with people. It is so impassioned. Mm-hmm. Brendan Getzel, if you haven't had a chance to work with Brendan, one of the most amazing pianists. Brendan is one of the makers of Misfit Cabaret with Kat Robichaud.
Okay.
And his skill is, I mean, it should be legendary. He is one of the great pianists I've ever worked with. And so I always say he sets the bar incredibly high. He is both the tightrope act and the safety net. He never lets you fall, but he always makes it virtuosic.
So what are some of the themes you've had in the past?
Oh, we have gone all over the place. You know, obviously we've done a pride show, and obviously we've done just in February we did Crooner's Breaks Your Heart. We did Songs of Love and Loss for February. And it's amazing. You know, at Halloween we get to do the spooky, witchy stuff. And so this year it's really been a little bit more of an opening. One of the things we realized is that for vocalists, they very rarely get to say, oh, I'd like to explore this because it's meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to evoke things that really reach into the singer's heart and say, not what are you good at singing, but what do you care about singing about? Mm. Because I think in a 26-seat venue, you cannot simply rely on technical skill. It's got to come from someplace inside because everyone's watching your eyes the whole darn time.
So what are some of the songs that you've done?
Oh, my gosh, my darling. One of the very first months that we were doing it, I had not intended to get up and sing, and we had a last minute cancellation, and I got up and did a rendition of Peggy Lee's "Is That All There Is."
Oh, I love that song.
But you know, I was only passably familiar with those spoken interstitials. You know, there's these long passages that are just like, "And does my father pulls me out of that burning building?" And so, as that happened, I started to extrapolate a little bit, and I said, "And as I stood there on the sidewalk in my Miss Piggy crop top and a set of hot pants that my mother thought she had lost, I looked at the burning building." You know, and it became more and more my story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of my responsibilities in the show is to lighten and leaven the show with a little bit of comedy and a little bit of the song you never thought you were singing. One of Chester's favorite lines about me is, "You might know the song. I promise you won't know the rendition you're about to see." Just this last month, I did Cry Me a River in the style of the Kinsey Six.
Ah.
Because the Kinsey Six used to do a version of Cry Me a River that they said their headliner, Wanda Lipnicki and her matching ottoman. And it was one of the performers in a dress that was literally the same fabric as an ottoman that they pulled out on stage.
I do love things like that.
I do too.
Like when your outfit matches the wallpaper.
You gotta love it, right? Yeah. So I had this moment, and I had never forgotten this performance. And I thought, you know, no one's ever going to hear that again. That's not part of their routine. And I'm maybe the last living person who knows that bit. I'm going to just replicate this for you. And I love those moments where you get to kind of pass the baton, especially in live theater, because it is an ephemeral medium. And we make it and then we remake it. And every time it's sort of a little different.
Now, what's the song that someone performed that you had never heard of before and then fell in love with immediately?
Okay. Well, wow, you couldn't have set me up better. This last month, Polly Amber Ross performed an original piece. Now, Polly and I have worked together for years and years, and Polly is doing something called Gaslit, which is a one-person show based on Gaslight, the old – you remember the old film?
Yeah.
You know, Ingrid Bergman, Joseph Cotten, Charles Boyer. And in Polly's version, it is a sort of a Victorian – this trapped Victorian spirit, this woman trying to understand how this could have happened to her, how these two men could have lied to her. In the original version, it was sort of a drag number. There were lip syncs put in. And the more Polly performed this, she performed it for a couple of years, and she realized this needs to be a musical. It needs to be a musical. So we reached out to Kat Robichaud, who's also an incredible composer. And so now the show is full of original songs, and Polly premiered the first of those songs at Crooners last month, and it's called Lavender.
Uh-huh.
And you want to talk about one of those moments. I had an onstage little meltdown where I wasn't expecting it, and I said, you know, there are moments where you realize the cultural touchstone is right now,
mm-hmm.
that you're not just passing on the torch of your ancestors, but you're actually living in the moment where the good work is happening.
Mm.
And to feel that and to know that in the middle of all the things we're going through, that trans joy can have such a catalyzing effect, and that in the midst of anger and frustration, you can have this incredible body of peace and serenity, and knowing that you've built something that will just simply endure because it's good. So that was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
That's awesome. It was my first time seeing Polly Amber Ross perform at Dracula.
Yes, at Oasis.
And as the moment she came on stage, the moment those two drag, it was like, wow, they really, like, suddenly the energy went through the roof, and they really, she had perfect comedic timing.
Absolutely.
And I was really impressed by her.
Polly Amber Ross and Vanilla Meringue in that show, I thought were, they were everything that I think Charles Pierce and Charles Bush and some of those early genre parodist lip synco mm-hmm. had tried to do, but they actually brought it into a more kinetic living form
mm-hmm.
where they really said, this audience is drag conversant. Mm-hmm. We don't have to shtick it up and lay it over their heads. We can actually be everything those women were in mm-hmm. that time
mm-hmm.
and have a contemporary mm-hmm. conversation. Yeah, that's a show I desperately hope comes back because I thought it was genius. And the men of that show, the mask characters, I will say, all did this wonderful job because you don't realize how impotent a set of men can truly be until you look at Dracula and uh-huh. go, nobody's doing nothing.
Right.
Nobody's helping anybody. I mean, this
mirrors
story.
Mirrors of our times, yeah.
Exactly. Mirrors of our time.
So where can people get tickets without mentioning prices?
Absolutely. If you simply go to StookiesBlueRoom.com. Music and events.
I don't even know how to spell that.
Okay, that is StookeyS.
Okay.
Blue Room, BLUERROOM. And that they have a music and events page. You'll see all sorts of great artists and performers.
Mm-hmm.
We are Crooners, a Lavender Live Sing, and you'll see the faces of Chester Vanderbox, Polly Amber Ross, and myself, Enchanté.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a 7 and a 9 o'clock show. Our 7 almost always sells out right away, so if anybody's really into that, get those tickets right now. If you like, I have a set of tickets I'd be happy to give your performer, one of your listeners, if you're into that idea.
I would like to do that, but I have some more questions for you.
Okay, great.
All right, so this month, the theme again is?
This is Crooners Goes to the Movies.
Crooners Goes to the Movies.
Yes.
What's the next month's theme?
I believe next month we are doing Crooners Bursts into Bloom. So it will be all songs of flowers,
ooh,
florals, and the spring.
Ooh,
time.
How'd you come up with that one?
Well, we are, you know, our April months can either be, they're usually a little wet and a little green.
Mm.
And I feel it in my bones when spring starts coming to San Francisco. I am like a little crocus bulb.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't
wait.
Like
you get the rheumatism.
Oh, I do. And you can't keep me inside for nothing. So I really wanted to celebrate that. And really, the composers of the 30s, 40s, 50s,
uh-huh.
if you look at them, they're in love with flowers. There's so many red roses for a blue lady and everything's coming up roses and all of it. There's so many great, great songs about flowers. So that's where we're headed.
So of all of the crooner eras, which one's your favorite?
Oh, my gosh. I love the era in which the songwriters were really king, which I think is
the 30s?
Yes, I really think it is. You know, the Songwriters Union was at its very strongest in the 1930s, and it's where we get some of these inadvertent, beautiful queer anthems like Bing Crosby singing Gay Love and not being able to change one of the pronouns because as big a star as he was, he couldn't beat the Songwriters Union. And they wrote he and him and his, so that's what Bing sang. He wanted to do the hits, and that's
okay.
How the hits were born. So I love that little moment. But I also think you know, right up to Noel Coward and Cole Porter all the way into the 50s, you have these incredible song styles and lyrical, the lyrical finesse of some of those artists is mm-hmm. just too good to believe.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. So one more time, what day and where for a crooners?
We are every fourth Sunday of the month, 7 and 9 p.m., at Stookie's Blue Room, mm-hmm. which is at the corner of Bush and Taylor here in San Francisco. You can find it on the website. Just simply follow your fingers to stookiesblueroom.com and find us on the music and events page. You are also welcome to go to my website, which is Fancy Pants SF, mm-hmm. and you will find links that will take you there and tell you about everything that we're doing, queer and exciting and retro.
Excellent. And now in the spirit of generosity, I would like to give away a pair of tickets to go see the show. Sean is going to say the date and time, and you're going to call me at 346-5376 to try and win these tickets.
Okay, everybody, look at your calendars. See if you are free on Sunday, March 23rd, 9 p.m. We do a lovely little 75-minute show. You'll be out in time to catch the last BART train, and that is 9 p.m. on Saturday, March 23rd. Two tickets in our lovely, intimate 25-seat venue will be yours.
Okay. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity, so check it out.
My old man was a bread stasher all his life. He never got fat. He wound up with a used car, a 17-inch screen, and arthritis. Tamari is a drag, man. Tamari is a king-size bust. They cry, put down pot, don't think a lot. For what? Time, how much, and what to do with it? Sleep, man, and you might wake up digging the whole human race, giving itself 3 days to get out. Tomorrow is a drag, pops. The future is a flake. I had a canary who couldn't sing. I had a cat that let me share my pad with her. I bought a dog that killed the cat that ate the canary. What is truth? I had an uncle with an Ivy League heart. He had life with a belt in the back. He had a button-down brain, wind up, a belt in the mouth, and a button-down lip. We cough blood on this earth. Now there's a race for space. We can cough blood on the moon soon. Tomorrow is Dragsville, cats. Tomorrow is a king-size drag. Fast shorts, swing with a gassy chick, turn on to 1,000 joys, smile on what happened or check what's going to happen, you'll miss what's happening. Turn your eyes inside and dig the vacuum. Tamara, drag.
Working too fast. How long can I last? jump right through. I used to travel single love, we chanced to mingle. Mr. Parson, stand by, for I've got a feeling I'm a-falling, falling for nobody else but you.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? I'm going to pronounce it the Dutch way because I can't help myself. It's Lisa Geduldig. How are you, Lisa?
Okay, thank you. No one pronounces it that way, but it works for me. I do the hard G's, Geduldig.
Geduldig.
Yeah, Dutch. When I went to Amsterdam and I went into the airport, they just looked at my passport and laughed because it's a word in Dutch, German, and Yiddish that means patient, but apparently not too common as a surname.
Very nice, very nice. So, Lisa, you've got a new show coming up. Tell us all about it.
I do. Starting this Sunday, March 23rd at the Eclectic Box.
Sunday.
Stage Works.
Uh-huh.
In the Mission on Valencia between 15th and 16th. It's going to be a monthly, one Sunday a month show called Resistance Comedy with a mishmash of comedians, and each month partial proceeds will benefit a different organization, and the ACLU will be the first organization that will be donating to this Sunday. So just a mix of comedians from San Francisco, occasionally people who come in from out of town. We have Daya Lakshmi Narayanan, Orion Levine, Carla Clay, Bob McIntyre, and myself for this first show.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about the process of coming up with this show. What was, I mean, obviously the Times, but give us more background.
Yeah, the Times. I used to do a monthly show at El Rio for about a dozen years, mm-hmm. and then the pandemic hit. And I went to visit my mom in Florida for 2 weeks and stayed for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was doing a monthly online show called Lockdown Comedy. And I'm back in San Francisco. My mom sadly passed away last summer, so I'm not commuting any longer. And I've been wanting to start up another monthly show. And I've produced a few shows at the Eclectic Box, which is a nice 70-seat black box theater a couple of blocks away from where I live. So I was interested in producing there again. And with the Times, I just thought we need some comic relief. And while we get together and laugh, let's also raise funds for different organizations that are doing life-saving work, like the ACLU, and soon there'll be an immigrant organization and trans organization and women's organizations. So just a little bit of laughter and fundraising all wrapped up in one.
Excellent, excellent. So you mentioned the first few comedians. As a comedian, you're like you've got your finger on the pulse. You know all the local comedians, right?
There's so many local comedians that I don't know all of them, but I know a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people will contact me or someone else will bring someone to my attention. So I try and keep an eye out for who's out there and who I'd like to bring to my stage. I have a couple of requirements. You have to be
funny,
not offensive, and not sexist, racist, homophobic, everything, and somebody who is doing what I see as thinking comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so many different styles, and I just want somebody who's doing intelligent comedy, and so there's just so many people to choose from. The people who I'm have on the first show or folks who have performed different shows of mine. Daya Lakshmi Narayanan is brilliant. She's Indian American, has 2 degrees from MIT, does storytelling, Orion Levine used to be based in the Bay Area. Now he's in L.A., and he's just making a name for himself. Carla Clay performs all over the Bay Area. And Bob McIntyre, who has been working in restaurants for 150,000 years and occasionally does stand up on my shows, and so I just love to have him as well. So, yeah, there's just a lot of talent out there to choose from.
Well, I know I've asked you this in the past, but you know I have a memory like a sieve. So when did you get...
Join the club.
When did you get bitten by the stand-up bug?
1989. I was the best woman at a friend's wedding and gave a tongue-in-cheek speech, and everyone came up to me and asked me where I performed, and I didn't. And then a couple of months later, I was at El Rio, and there was a flyer on the bulletin board for stand-up comic wannabes. This guy was doing a class at his house near El Rio, and I started going to that. And then one night, we had class at El Rio with a real audience, and it felt great. And Malcolm Thornley, who is the late owner of El Rio, came up to me afterwards and said, "If you ever want to perform, give me a call." And I got my courage up a couple of months later and then started performing there. And then Josie's opened and I started performing there. And then I accidentally started producing comedy shows in 1993 with Kung Pao Kosher Comedy, Jewish Comedy on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant.
How do you,
33rd year.
How do you accidentally start? Is it like a Tom, I was talking to someone where he had a birthday party and then every year they're like, "Oh, what are you going to do this year?" And it turned into the Afro Solo Arts Festival. And you, how do you accidentally do that?
I just thought I would just throw that sentence out there. I'm glad you stopped me. Everything in my life is an accident. I accidentally started doing stand-up because I gave a speech at a friend's wedding.
Right.
I accidentally started producing Kung Pao Kosher Comedy because I found out from a woman who was visiting from L.A., who was a comedian, who told me about this women's comedy night in Massachusetts. So I went and performed there. And it ended up that it was at a Chinese restaurant. So a conversation with a friend from New York led to the idea coming from me saying, "I had the most ironic experience last night. I was telling Jewish jokes at a Chinese restaurant." And out of that conversation came the idea of Jewish comedy on Christmas at a Chinese restaurant. And I'd never written a press release. I'd never produced an event. But I thought it was going to be a one-off. And then it sold out and hundreds of people were turned away. And I thought, all right, maybe I'll do it a second year. And here we are in 2025 with the 33rd annual shows going on this December. So that was how it was an accident. Everything is an accident. Coming to San Francisco, I came for a three-week visit 42 years ago.
and here you are. What I love about it's not the first time that I hear that people were just doing something as a lark. And it grew into, 30 years down the road, they're still doing it. And I don't think people really understand that, because when you see something from the outside, when it's been in progress for a while, it just seems like this amazing thing. And you don't realize that almost everything has a humble beginning, almost an afterthought. So
And how much it takes to put on an event. You know, because I produce events, I go to other events and realize, wow, they had to book people, they had to do sound check, they had to do this, that, and the other thing. Everything just looks flawless, but it takes a lot to put it on. Yeah, I think San Francisco is probably full of people who have just accidentally been doing something for the last 30 years that started as a lark of an idea.
And thank
as well as came here to visit and stayed for 30 or 40 years.
And thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for people who don't know how much work something takes. Because if you know, now that we're older, we know just how arduous things can be. You have to be young and kind of young and dumb. That's the only way things get done, is like the people with all the energy and
age.
Yeah.
Because when I first started doing Kung Pao, the shows were at 6 and 9 o'clock. No, yeah. 6 and 9 o'clock, and now I have them at 5 and 8 because
everyone's getting
when
older.
I turned about 50, I was sitting at the late show going, oh my God, this is too late for me. Oh no, it was a 9:30 show, and I'm like, I can't go out at 9:30. I can't do a show at 9:30 and finish it up at 11. So now my late show is at 8 o'clock, which is always funny when someone from out of town comments about that. You know, one of the comics is like, ooh, late show, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, when a show starts at 7, I'm like, I always joke. It's like, I'll be home in time for Matlock.
So. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I don't go to anything at 9 or 10 o'clock. So, it's, you know, I was just living in Florida helping my mom for 3 years, and I was doing the early bird special for dinner, and that was something I made fun of. Like, I ended up living everything I'd been making fun of in my career for 3 years. And then I was like, oh, okay, now I get it.
I like eating early.
Exactly.
I thought it was
8
dinner.
8 o'clock midnight snack.
I was watching a movie the other day, and they're like, he's like, well, I'll pick you up for dinner at 9. And I thought, 9 o'clock for dinner? That's how old I am. So,
you know, these things that make sense in your 20s, but then your 50s and 60s. Like, I've been living on the second floor of this apartment building for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of days ago when I was walking up the stairs, I thought, I moved in here at 27. Now I'm 63. How long am I going to be able to live here for, walking up a flight of stairs?
Well, I live at the top of 72 stairs. But the thing is...
Oh, my God. But who's counting?
Who's counting?
Stairs?
But the thing is, you know, as long as you're walking them, you'll be able to walk them. But the minute you move, your body will just forget how to walk upstairs at that point. Because I used to live at the top of a hill, you know, at the top of, like, Pine and Mason. And so I was always walking up the hill because, you know, you're on the cable car line, so you can never get on. So, but then as soon as I moved someplace flat, it's like, oh, those hills are so steep. So
I think it's hysterical that, you know, there are 72 steps.
And it depends on which side of the building I come on. Sometimes it's 67, sometimes it's 72. But I tell that because, you know, so if there are so few people who want to come up the stairs anymore. The older I get, the fewer people want to visit me. So, but that's neither here nor there. What's here or there is your resistance comedy. We're like talking.
Comedy, yes.
Like nobody's listening.
So resistance comedy. So it's going to be one Sunday a month. It's not like a specific Sunday a month. But the next, so it'll be this Sunday, the 23rd, and then Easter Sunday, and then Mother's Day are the next two Sundays.
Oh, very nice.
Those are easy to remember. You can go to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence Easter Sunday in the park, in Dolores Park, during the day. Grab some dinner and then come to the show.
And how do people get tickets, and can they buy tickets at the door, and where is it again?
Yes. So it's at the Eclectic Box, which is 446 Valencia Street, between 15th and 16th Streets. And you can go to cityboxoffice.com for tickets, or you can go to koshercomedy.com and click on Resistance Comedy. So this Sunday at 7 o'clock, good lineup, and partial proceeds go to the ACLU. And that's the scoop.
All right. Well, Lisa Godoldig, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you so much. And for
thank you so much for having me.
And for starting up Resistance Comedy, because we do need laughter, and we do need resistance. We need the both.
Absolutely, we do.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you, listening audience.
Thank
you. See you Sunday.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, there's so much going on in the world right now that you can go and see right here in our city. This is a great day for you, actually. So go check out all of the stuff that we've talked about today, the Resistance Comedy and Crooners and the Afro Solo Arts Festival. There's so much to enjoy that if you're not going out there and getting your mind touched, you're making a conscious decision to do so. Mr. Ford's here, so it's time for me to turn the mic over. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.